I want you to call me for all of wrestling's latest news and views. I've been involved in wrestling for 35 years, and nobody knows wrestling like me. Remember the number,
1-900 Wrestling!
Stupid idiots.
They call me Hara!
If you smell what The Rock is cooking.
And his name is John Cena!
Well, look at this, prima donna!
Thank God Donald Trump's a whole idiot!
Welcome everybody to 1-900 Wrestling. We're going to talk all about all the things going on recently. We had a big ass week of wrestling. My name is Willie Dills, and you may notice that today we've got three co-hosts in the house. That is because not only am I joined by new co-host and continuing friend Lane the Main, but Justin Robert Young is making his triumphant return to 1-900 Wrestling. Welcome back, Jerry.
I'm back. Look, man, it was a great weekend of wrestling. I got coaxed back on to the 1-900 program. I'm very excited to be home.
How could you stay away with all that was going on? This is the one time of year that Brock Lesnar actually decides to sell for somebody, SummerSlam. And so obviously you had to come back and sell for us.
You knew for sure the second that Enzo Amore is embarrassing himself publicly that I there's no way I can let that go unrecorded. I can't have my opinions not out there for posterity.
One of our favorite things to do on this show is shit on what Enzo's doing. That should be a recurring segment.
Yeah, I remember before me, like Phoenix came out and you guys just.
Oh, yeah. That was basically a whole episode.
It was a whole episode. All right. I'll do this very, very quickly about Enzo. It's so sad. I am officially, I've gone from let's laugh at Enzo to I pray for Enzo.
Let's call Enzo and make sure he's okay. Yeah.
I'm still at the laugh part. I'm still at the first part. Like this.
Here's what you need to do. Go to Pro Wrestling Sheet. They have his Instagram stories after the event. Mm. And he, let's just say this. He lives in LA. So there's plenty of recreational edibles that he might have consumed for which would make somebody.
So totally legal and okay. Yeah.
That being said, he appears to be like somebody that is having some real drug problems.
Now, okay. So let's talk about it. So what happened? So
yeah, to explain what happened
to me that didn't see it.
All right. Yeah. So during Survivor Series, which I mean, it shows our fixation or my fixation. I'm not going to blame this on you guys. I'm the one who brought it up and demanded we talk about it more. But Enzo was spotted like Waldo in the front row of Survivor Series. It was going to be a fun little thing of, oh, look who decided to come and watch the show. But instead, he decided to get up and do his entire, my name is a routine, standing on his chair in the front row. Earlier that day, the newly rebranded NZO, now no longer Real One, now NZO, released his new album, which included a track involving his relationship with current WWE superstar Liv Morgan.
I have a question.
Go.
So why would they let Enzo in knowing this? Like how crazy is, like you would think he would have to have like some type of disguise or something.
Well, he did.
Like,
it was like a hood or something, right? It wasn't.
Oh, he had a black wig on. He looked like a freaking beetle.
Yeah.
Like that was the thing he had.
I mean, he's still
a wig
very
on
obviously Enzo to us, but to random guy who works, you know, security at the WWE event.
No,
unless
no,
they were on, warned he, about he him, went, you know,
he went on StubHub, I'm guessing, and you know, spent a G on a ticket and those were good seats. And he decided to get up and get kicked out and apparently get either banned from the Staples Center, WWE events or both.
That's what I was going to ask. The logistics of it, like he bought a ticket to a WWE event on like what grounds can they fight? Like, escort him out.
And that's like, actually kind of funny. If one of us decided to just stand up in our seat and do the Enzo bit, that would just be a wrestling fan doing a wrestling thing.
Yeah.
You know? But when Enzo
he's
very clearly trying to distract from the show.
If you are doing it in between, and I'll tell you what, if you actually watch the broadcast version and imagine what was going on backstage, like that was quick.
Sure.
Like he starts doing his thing. He literally gets to the end of Bada Boom, realest champ in the room. He had a fake.
By the way,
belt,
he also decided to still use Champ.
Yeah. And he got ripped down by the same security guard that not but 2 years ago, Dills, you and I were at WrestleMania when Gronk made his way past the security guard.
Yeah.
That ripped, and I'll tell you what, Jesus, the strength on that woman. She is.
It's like a clothesline almost. Like she grabbed him.
She basically
sent him to the nether realm. Like he was just like you're watching that Twitter video, and he just suddenly disappeared out of the frame.
Done.
Yeah.
So anyway, I feel bad for Enzo. Let's no longer talk about Enzo. Let's talk about actual active wrestling.
I will say this though. I'm glad you brought up the Instagram stories because I thought the end of it. Now I guess there's more. I have to dive deeper.
It's just because if it were a total work from a clear thinking person, right? A, he would have capitalized more about it in the moment, and then he would have immediately had on Instagram like, hey, it's me, Enzo. You know, yeah, you go check it out on Spotify and Apple Music. Bada boom, hey, real one, right? Like he would have hyped it.
Sure.
Like this is what you have all the attention. He did the thing where he's a jackass. He debases himself for attention. That's fine as long as you're making money on it at the end.
Yeah.
Like Drake Maverick can pee himself and at the end of the day say, I caught a check for that. I might have got a pay-per-view bonus.
Yeah, this cost ends up.
I wanted to play good to make this story as good as possible, you know, understanding that there's an element of embarrassment that goes along with it. But he didn't even do it. His two things on Instagram were, bro, I'm laughing, bro. I'm laughing at all these memes. And then him wearing his new shirt with these glasses and saying like, yo, what if I had worn these glasses? That's it. That's how he capitalized on this. Cause you can't push this button more than once.
Yeah.
You got a new album out. Plug the fucking album.
Yeah. I will say though, this does make me want to go check the album out. Cause I would have completely not even noticed that it came out. Until this,
I think it's a publicity thing. Like now you're looking him up because you're like, oh my gosh, he made just an ass of himself. So you're going to look him up and maybe, but you're right. It could have been like, he could have tossed CDs to people. Like
there's a million ways that he could have done something that would have capitalized on it. Like I'm not even mad at the publicity stunt. I think the Liv Morgan stuff is kind of gross, but all right. It's SoundCloud rap. Like it's not exactly, you know, the fucking Knights of the Round Table here. there's not exactly chivalry is not a code in the SoundCloud rap game.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like just sell the album. And also, that's the other thing is you listen to a little bit of the album. He's got the best thing I can say about the album. He's got somebody doing really good production for him.
So
the production.
Yeah. I think the thing though that he has to realize is that his fan base is the WWE fans. So he needs to like allow that to be a thing, right? Like he's not going to carve a brand new path for himself here and find a whole bunch of people who are really going to love him. He needs to rely on the people who liked his character in WWE to now purchase this album.
And he is quickly finding out that the career he could have had in being a guy who makes rap music as a WWE
and be a
superstar,
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
was a very exciting path that I think would have done very well for him. But unfortunately, if this is a drug thing, then it's a drug
thing.
This
could be the bridge burned too. We might have just watched the bridge get completely burned and torched.
Now, here's the other side. If WWE pays for his rehab, then he'll be.
You got a redemption story
ready for the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, you got a network
time
special.
Time will tell.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about there was so much wrestling that happened this weekend.
Yeah.
Let's open with War Games because I did not watch the entirety of War Games, but I definitely plan on finishing that off because what I have seen of it so far was incredible. And I think we now can clearly say that War Games is a yearly happening that everyone is not going to miss. Justin, you watched the whole thing, Lane. I assume you watched the whole thing as well.
I was with you. I watched bits and parts. Hmm.
I think together we can put a piece together a mosaic.
Sure.
Let me ask you a general question about War Games though, because that match was amazing.
Yes.
It was really good, but let's remember that War Games in the NWA and WCW were built around the Four Horsemen. It was the Four Horsemen match.
Sure.
And you needed Four Horsemen to make it a match because they were always getting each other's backs. They were always gang beating people. And now either you have a rival gang that they can settle the score like they did with the NWO, or you have the gathering of the faces. Everybody who's gotten their ass kicked by the Four Horsemen
throughout the last year. Yeah, whatever. Are you saying when Undisputed Era moves up that these probably could discontinue?
This might be the last War Games we see in NXT.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Well, like if another team moves up, like or, like takes their spot, like what is the War Raiders? Like we could see them, but it's just like they have to have someone that has the balls to like claim it.
But yeah, like that's the thing own. Is that yeah. I don't think you could build although Sanity was in the first War Games, I don't think you could put Sanity in the Four Horsemen spot.
Sure.
I think they need to be their own thing just because you really need to kind of like secretly love but also hate the heel team.
Yeah.
Like it's got to be the Four
and
Horsemen.
That's what Undisputed Era absolutely is.
The Undisputed Era. Yeah. And they're like, they're so funny. They're so great. I went to the San Jose live show, which is going to be, that's taped for, I guess, next week.
Yeah, yeah.
NXT.
Some of that was like house show stuff and some of it was clearly for so, NXT
by the way,
television.
There's a Lars Sullivan versus Keith Lee match
ooh,
that you are going to.
Ooh, buddy.
It is really good.
Who? Lars got called up, right?
Well, he's getting eventually. Well, he's got vignettes.
On his way up.
Yeah, he's got vignettes.
He's on his way up. Who knows how long, if he's on the express route or if he's on the local.
Yeah.
But he is on the way. But look, Undisputed Era is fucking over.
Oh, yeah.
They are super, super, super over. And they define that match on a level that I don't know if you can just replace. Now, maybe, I mean, you got enough charismatic guys that are coming up. Maybe you can put somebody there. But the fact that Adam Cole plus Kyle O'Reilly and Fish are there, like, that's something special. And I think they got to move all those guys up together unless the Undisputed Era just stays in NXT forever and they just kick out members.
Yeah.
Would you move up Roderick? Would you move up Strong with him? Would he go?
No, yeah. No, I think he's a part of the team now. I like them as a four-man stable for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't need to be, but I think he's fit in pretty damn well. And right now, they're the best damn stable that I've seen in a Shield withstanding. Outside of that, it's like who's been like more entertaining when it comes to being a stable in forever.
I mean, New Day, but we're talking about
in a different
some
way.
Of the best. Yeah, because I would think heel New Day, you could do a War Games around.
Sure.
Heel New Day. Right? You can't do it with face New Day. Now you can do New Day versus the Undisputed Era on the main roster.
Oh, Jesus, please.
You could bring down the New Day to do a special thing with NXT. Yeah. But you need, man, do you need, like, I think it's lost in that War Games doesn't happen very often. Not necessarily even because Vince apparently hates it, but because you need the Four Horsemen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And WWE is never good about keeping stables together.
No, that's true. So, that's the eventuality of it breaking up is one of the best parts of a stable, right? Because you're always kind of thinking about how.
Well,
this
not just the breakup. It's because it's usually like when merch sales go down, you end them, and then now is for the bring back.
Yeah,
like they're reunited in the end,
and you get
like
built-in feuds and the whole thing.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, before we get to the actual War Games match, Jerry, what did you watch pre-show? Because I heard there was a Matt Riddle moment that I did not get to see.
I watched that.
Yeah, Matt Riddle began the show. Okay. I watched it on Reddit because it was 5 seconds. he destroyed Cassius Ohno. Cassius Ohno.
He basically just hit his
finisher
right away and then just pinned him?
Yeah. Okay. Look. Cassius is going to, I think he has now.
He's settled into his role.
Jobber of NXT.
I think he's a coach too.
Yeah.
And if he's not full time, then he's transitioning into it.
He hasn't gone full Juice Robinson yet in NXT. He's also doing other stuff.
No. Well, I think the way that they talk about him, and they did a little like mini doc about how he's like one of the smartest people. So I wouldn't be shocked if he stays there. But that being said, that was great. I did not watch the women's match, but those last three matches, including the War Games, were some of the best stuff.
So I did watch the women's match. I could talk to that real quick. It was a 2 out of 3 falls match, which I didn't know going in. I was watching it and immediately Kyrie gets like pinned. And I'm like, wait, what? No. And then they're like, that's the first of the 3 falls. And I'm like, okay, sweet. In the end, Shayna Baszler ended up retaining. That's fine, I think.
With the help of her little gang.
Yeah, she's got a little gang now. But this is all, I think this is part of a bigger buildup, right? Like, there's a lot going on here.
There is a lot going on.
Women's wrestling now has a lot going on all over the place.
At San Jose, I caught a tag match with Jasmine Duke and Maria Shafir, the other two of the MMA.
The MMA horsewomen. Yes.
And they were announced as such,
really?
Which I don't know if they were announced as that at War Games, but they were announced as the Four Horsewomen at the NXT Live event. You watch Ronda Rousey and you watch Shayna Baszler and you're like, oh my God, how on earth did they get that good after for Shayna had like a year, Ronda Rousey had like on and off like a year and then like intensive like 3 months. These two, you're like, yeah, that's about as far along as they should be being like very athletic. Like learning the ropes.
Yeah.
They're to say that they're not the naturals that the other two are is not an insult. It is, the fact that the other two are just studs, like they should not be as good as they are. Jasmine Duke and Maria Shafir are both good. Look, they're very athletic. They're going to be fine. You're going to be able to hide them in that 4-on-4 that will eventually happen. But I'll tell you what, it's exciting. Specifically where, we wound up ending the weekend with the Ronda Rousey Charlotte Flair fight.
Yeah, which I think is, to me, probably the main event of this show because that was a lot. Let's move on to Aleister Black, Johnny Gargano real quick. Obviously, this match is hype as hell. Just when you say the two names. Black takes it. That's, I guess, kind of surprising, but maybe not because maybe Gargano's not long for this NXT world at this point.
Yeah.
Oh no, I think we got one more match for sure.
Sure.
That is the Dark DIY versus Black Velvet, which they
yeah, Dark DIY. I love that.
And Black Velvet.
But other than that, like, look, this was Aleister Black's return performance. He looks great. He's whatever work he's put in at the gym to kind of bulk up his shoulders. I think because his body he's never going to be cut guy.
Sure.
He's always like
he's
going to be
long
like,
and lean guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of guy. But like the fact that he's bulked up in his shoulders just makes him look a million times better, in my opinion. And, that the ending of that match with Johnny fake asking to be kicked in the face and then trying to cheat him and then getting kicked in the face twice. Like that was awesome. That's grind it up and let me snort it. Like I'm sure got back into the Uber.
All right. Well, I'm excited now to actually catch this one because I you can just tell this is going to be sweet. I'm guessing Gargano went completely lifeless, limp Gargano there at the end. And that's always fun to watch too.
Oh, I mean, I can't even put into words the physical perfection that was. There was a moment at the live event where I was watching Kyle O'Reilly, and Kyle O'Reilly specifically has this very like marionette-y kind of like movement to him that like watching him live just reminded me, like he could be. I wonder if he got like clown college, like. Like he has like that very like and not like a Barnum and Bailey clown, but like, and like a classic like Italian.
Like, sure. Like back when they're kind of mimes that were like a funny mime kind of thing with just a lot of exaggerated movement.
Yeah. Like one of those like, oh, he has like control over every one of his joints, like kind of things. And there is a moment in with Gargano and Black where I'm like, there's just physical storytelling here. That needs to be studied frame by frame to appreciate.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. All right. I'm looking forward to that. We got to also talk quickly about the other half of Dark DIY, Tommaso Ciampa and Velvet Dream. Another match I'm incredibly excited about here. So this was for the NXT title. And Tommaso Ciampa still the Ciampa.
There is such a great element of where we are at NXT, and you're seeing a lot of it with New Japan as well, where the endings of the matches only bother you if you're reading results. Because yeah. if you watch it, you're like, Velveteen Dream is a mega star, and the match ends with the hero trying one thing too many and a close competitor catching him, a savvy competitor catching him.
Yeah.
Like, not because he's an idiot, not because he screwed up, not because the competitor is so much better than him and he looks like a dope. Like, this was yet another coming out party for Velveteen Dream. And yet another example of his Hulk Hogan cosplay, for which apparently will never be exhausted.
Never. It'll keep going.
So, yeah, another one I'm super excited about. And from what I heard, anyway, this was Spotfest with psychology, right?
Which, it was great.
Yeah.
And by the way, comes out as Hollywood Hulk Hogan, 3 leg drops.
Nice.
Not one, not two. 3 leg drops.
I'm sure his leg drop is much more entertaining too, and flamboyant than the Hulkster's. All right, so let's get to the main event here, which is the War Games match. And again, we talked briefly about what makes it kind of special as far as Undisputed Era being in it. But I was curious to know how they were going to top what they did last time, right? Last time you had 3 teams. This is essentially 2 teams this time.
Who were the teams?
So Undisputed Era was one team. The other team featured Pete Dunne, Ricochet, and War Raiders. So 4-on-4. And kind of a weird who's face, who's heel situation here.
Yeah.
In the end, that didn't really matter, right? Everybody was a face in this match because the crowd just was... Everybody in this match was over with the crowd. Mm-hmm. There was tons and tons, again, of insanity going on, even though insanity was not there. Sanity was not there. But it was just... I mean, it was just like nonstop, you know? Like, they slowly let the people out of the cages as they did before. And even before you get all 8 guys in there, it's friggin' nonstop. So anybody who hasn't watched this match, I encourage you do so. I can't even really stop and explain moments. Although I will say,
Ricochet's
like,
isn't an inhuman.
It was
like,
just
he
ridiculous.
Is not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say though that, you know, if you thought the suplex Adam Cole spot was pretty big last year, you just watch the Ricochet. I don't even know what you call it off the top of the cage.
Double
was.
Moonsault.
Yeah. Double rotation moonsault.
Yeah. That almost basically, I think he almost died. I think this was almost the end of his career.
He overshot the
everybody.
The crew.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to catch him.
Yeah.
God knows what you're even supposed to catch when he's rotating
twice. I
have no
idea. Yeah.
A body.
Just throw your arms up and hope for the best, right?
And they did something I usually don't see in indies that, like, you can tell that, like, they're the top of their game is when you're all getting in the huddle, people usually just stand there.
Yeah.
But this, they were like punching.
They're still
each other
fighting.
Back,
yeah. Like, they made it look pretty realistic. Yeah.
Because when it's playing, people know, like, when everyone just is huddling up, just looking up, then you know it's about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, when those happen, you just grab a body. Anything you can grab onto, you grab it.
Have you ever been a part of one of these huddle ups that's going to catch a man flipping off the top?
Yeah, I'll send it to you. I'll send it in the Discord as well. I was a part of a top rope to the outside. I don't even know what it was. Just grabbing a body.
Okay.
Yeah.
Taking out, like, I was in like an A-man.
This is the technical term they teach you in wrestling school. They're like, all right, this is the part where we do what we call grab a body. Everybody huddle up.
He's basically just jumping into us.
Sure.
Like, it was like a gut punch.
Yeah.
And he's like, just catch me. Okay. And then there was like a bunch of us there. Yeah, because you're trying to, like, basically hold on to him so you're the one taking the brunt of it.
And these are things that you cannot practice, I'm guessing, as well. You can't be like, let's go work on that real quick. Like, you just kind of say what you're going to do, and then you do it, right?
Well, the feeling on the top rope. So, like, when I'm training, the top rope is the scariest thing. It's much higher because in the ring, you're about 5 feet up. But when you look down, you're like 11 feet up.
Yeah.
Like, it's real, and you're so scared. But when a crowd's behind you, I could do anything. You want me to take my shirt off? Absolutely. Pay me. Like, I don't care. Like, you can have me do whatever. Because that's the way it feels like. You're the center of their attention. You pay. They paid for this. So, like, yeah, it's when that happens, you're just trying to protect the guy. Because I've seen it not happen, and it is not good.
Oh, like a guy pussy out at the last moment?
Well, not just that, but I've seen guys, like, they jump, and they'll throw. The guy jumping will throw his arms. And it clears the guy in front of him.
Yeah.
So he's pushing the guy. And then he just eats it.
Well, we almost saw Ricochet eat it pretty friggin' hard here. He seems to find a way to, even when it looks like he misses, the landing is super smooth. But he was coming from, you just said 11 feet when you're on the ropes. He's probably looking down at like 25 feet then or something, right? Like at that point.
Yeah, because it's usually like probably anywhere from 9 feet to 11 feet, just the ring.
But this cage was clearly like twice as tall as most of the wrestlers in there. There was actually,
I would say probably 20-ish.
Okay, so there was a really cool moment,
like,
by the way,
for him to get a double rotation.
Yeah.
That was about as athletic as you're going to get, short of Cirque du Soleil, and he still barely got the double rotation in. Like, he's just insane. I can't tell you though how much I think he's aided by feuding with the Undisputed Era, because the one thing that still has not yet fully clicked for Ricochet, and this is I think what happens with a lot of indie guys that get really, really big, is you don't really need to cut promos on the indies, right? Like, either you've done stuff on TV or you've been a part of something else. But if you're a guy like Ricochet, like, yeah, he worked under a mask in Lucha Underground. He's a very charismatic guy, but his character hasn't kind of clicked in a way that Adam Cole has, like, a character. Like, you could see, here's my test. Could you see your favorite wrestler walking on to your favorite show and being like a character that interacts with other people? Could you imagine how their character would interact with your other, with like favorite characters that you've had on a television show? Because if that's the case, if you're like, The Rock would walk into Central Perk and he would tell Rachel that it doesn't matter what her name is and bring him a latte and he's the people's champion. You'd be like, okay, well, that's a fully formed character. And Ricochet is very charismatic. He's obviously got 10, 15 out of 10 in terms of in-ring skills, but he's yet to kind of hone exactly what that is. He cocky guy? Is he underdog guy? Is he here to please you? Is he here to make you understand that he's the greatest of all time? Like, there's just that one tenth of a thing that needs to click.
Yeah.
And I hope it clicks in NXT before he goes to the main roster, because that's that extra little shred.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes AJ Styles a main eventer and not a mid-carder.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, though, like, right now, like, what he is enough, but I think you are correct that when you can put him into something where Undisputed Era can carry the talking portion of the program. Now, his stuff with the Velveteen Dream, though, was pretty spectacular, because I think Velveteen is one of those guys who elevates other people, and he was just, like, the guy who, can you do this, right?
I think his just charisma bled over as well, like, Velvet, like, we usually see a physical carrying of the match. Velveteen charisma carried the match. Like, his character was everything Ricochet needed. And I didn't think about that before, Justin. Like, when Ricochet was in Lucha Underground, he had a mouthpiece, like something like that. Yeah. He was such a crazy physical athletic person. You're like, okay, that makes sense. Like, you understood the mouthpiece. And now here, you still get the crazy athletic high spots, but the character, like, it's going to have to happen.
Sure.
Like,
I have, you know, to me, Velveteen Dream never really clicked for me until that Aleister Black feud, because, and to me, Aleister Black never really clicked on the same level until that Velveteen Dream feud. Yeah. That to me is still such a magical feud, because it gave both guys something that they needed. It gave Velveteen the reason why he was so physical and violent, and it gave Aleister a character beyond I'm Spooky Fingers Moody Man who you know is maybe a vampire.
Yeah.
We're not sure. Like,
he's vampire-ish.
Yeah, but the fact that he was just like, oh, no, no, no. Like, he was drawn out by the story was him, like, finding a shred of humanity and connecting to somebody in a way that we've never really seen him connect to anybody else, even from there. It's like they have this strange bond that I think is going to be great if we go into this tag team feud. But that's really what is I hope we get, because Pete Dunne has it.
Oh, yeah.
In a way that.
Pete Dunne's character is complete.
Yet to have it.
Yeah, absolutely. I do hope that when Ricochet does end up moving up, that we're not just like, hey, just give him Leo Rush and But I could see it. I could totally see it happening. It wouldn't be terrible.
I'd be fine if he had Leo Rush. Yeah. My fear is that he is just by himself and he's just going to get eaten alive by those overscripted promos.
That is a possibility. Here, though, he's fantastic. He's big spot man. He's still video game physics guy. He's insane. All of it was insane, by the way. Undisputed Era did not win this time, and Adam Cole ate the pin. So,
And also, War Raiders got way over Hanson. This was a star-making performance for him specifically. Yeah. That tag team at San Jose two nights before, that is over.
Well, you know why, though? We've seen a couple of big guys before, right? Like, we've seen that many, many times, and it's hard to prove, especially in NXT, where, like, we went from,
AOP.
Well, but yeah, and then before that, we had the Wasteland guys, who now it's like,
they were the Ascension, but the Ascension was I mean, you know, you had one dude who was like barrel chested, another one who had the same build as the lead singer from Creed, that they were being sold as
monsters,
like,
as
like the most insane. Yeah. We've never seen monsters like this in NXT before. Yeah. And then
AOP still have Heavy Machinery Reverend Puck just brought up. I forgot about them completely.
That I think is the problem, is that I think they're a far more charismatic team. I think they're a team that is liked a little bit more by that NXT audience. And then War Raiders come in, and if you're a New Japan fan, you're like, oh my God, War Machine, they're great. And they are. They're an awesome tag team. But I think they had a hill to climb, and they climbed it on Saturday.
Yeah, and they are fantastic. I think that everyone's going to know that pretty soon. Now they know it now, by the way, after this match.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Survivor Series, because still a lot to get to, and we don't have that much time to get to it, so let's do it.
My predictions were awful.
Yeah, actually, I forgot about those. I got to look that up.
My predictions were straight.
Well, because your predictions were bad because you happened to pick SmackDown ever.
Well, and you said it at the end. You're like, well, one of us will have to be wrong, like, a lot, because there's no way they're going to do...
Yeah,
like you went all Raw, I went all SmackDown. We're like, and then they basically went all.
And did you hear too that apparently the one match SmackDown won, which was the pre-show, that was actually kind of like a botched produced job?
Yeah, it was. Raw was supposed to win to do the full sweep, so they didn't count the pre-show, which I was mad because the whole show, I'm like, man, at least I got the pre-show. Like, at least, like, that was, like, the one I wanted. And then
you weren't supposed to.
So I did not see the pre-show. What was the botched ending?
Well, they didn't botch the ending. Apparently, they botched the writing job. Like, they didn't get the memo that it was supposed to be a clean sweep of Raw. And so they wrote it in that the Usos won over Revival at the end. And by the way, I was really hopeful that Revival was going to pull this one off, because that would have been sweet. It was like, oh, finally Revival's about to get a push of some sort, which even by being the last team on the Raw side is kind of that, but then the Usos were able to go over, so that was the only, it came out later that
didn't count.
Vince wanted it to be all Raw, and somebody who wrote that match actually wrote in the wrong thing, so whoops. So speaking of that, let's see, I won that one. I kicked your ass.
I got like two. I got two. I want to have a punishment.
And the two that you got, people. I also got. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was the same one. It was it Rhonda, and who was the other one?
You also had Buddy, and I had Buddy.
Yeah, and everything else. Mm-hmm. I just shit the bed.
All right, so I also clean sweeped. Vince put me over in the predictions. let's go through some of these matches here. So we open up with, like we said, the tag team thing. That was, by the way, a super fun match for a pre-show match. And you knew it was going to be, right? I mean... all these guys are awesome. And then the clones were also there.
They were there.
And it was great. And then we move into, I think the show opens with the women's one. Is that correct?
I think that's right. Yep.
Okay. And my big moment in this match is at one point, Nia Jax and Mandy Rose were both in the ring together. Mandy Rose started beating the hell out of Nia Jax. She had to tag out. So Mandy Rose, better than Becky Lynch and better than Nia Jax. Just putting that out.
They did the whole fist thing too. The fist became like its own character.
Oh yeah, yeah. Nia Jax's fist actually won this match, not Nia Jax.
Yeah, and that's why I like too. Like, it was the same with Braun Strowman with the get these hands. It was kind of an accidental thing that got over.
She kept like looking down at it and being like, "Oh, I got this crazy weapon, you guys, watch out."
And that's why I thought she was going to take the Big Show finish and just start punching people.
If they give her like a Big Show knockout punch.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that would be like her
thing.
They
want to stop her from punching people.
I can break it. Man, I watched that again. She just thwapped Becky Lynch. It
wasn't a wrestling punch.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you would know far more than I would. And I will defer to people who actually are aware of, you know, theatrical physicality. Yeah. And the line between like oops that was not what my body did a thing I wasn't trying to make it do, versus like that's way fucked up and unsafe. Like obviously nobody would want, and considering where that Ronda match ended, assuming Becky Lynch was going to be in that role, like oh my god, that would have been
one of amazing
over moments.
I talked to my trainers about it. I'm like, how could. Like, why did she do this? Like, why did she follow through? Basically, like, it was so the only thing that we could think of was it was supposed to miss.
Yeah, it's supposed to completely airball. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, she missed and then Becky dodged it, or it was supposed to be like the shoulder or something. And then Becky leaned in. I've seen that happen with elbows before. Like, the same thing, like a nose broke. You're supposed to hit the shoulder, top collarbone here. And then someone winced.
And yeah. You
get the nose broke. But that's all we could see, or she just wanted to, like, I don't want to say like
she went into business for herself.
I really think it was an accident.
Yeah, I don't think
her hand was messed up too.
I also don't think, based on how they've all reacted to it,
yeah,
because there are people that don't like each other that just don't interact, right? They famously, you know, Sasha Banks and Alexa don't like each other. You don't see them playing games on Twitter at replying each other, right?
Sure.
Like, they, unless it's for business, they're not screwing around.
And also the fact that this turned into a Nia Jax push to me does, like, that means that when they all talked it over, they're like, this clearly was an accident. Otherwise, I think punishment would have been the response.
Is this
a heel
turn as well? Like, she's been,
she's very fluid.
She's been the tweener. I mean, considering she's already back, you know, with Alexa Bliss jumping up and down and cheering for her, when literally the entire WrestleMania build was about her fat shaming.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking too. Yeah,
you know, then I think, look, if it didn't happen 5 seconds ago, it doesn't count. But yeah, look, I think she is. I mean, they've been building her up with Tamina in a way that makes me wonder whether or not when they're going to pull the trigger on these female
tag teams.
Because they've got all these teams now that have slowly and steadily been being put together, but whether or not Nia is now someone that they want to fold into the main event is remains to be seen.
Yeah, I mean, there's all these potential teams already ready to rock too, right? Like, you got like your Mickie James, Alexa, you got Nia Jax, Tamina, like you talked about, you got the Iconics. Bailey, Sasha can go together anytime. It's all like there and ready to go. It's just, when are they gonna actually pull the trigger? This was a fun match. I think the women's division just all around has been great. It wasn't super anything amazing and special, but I thought there was a lot of fun moments. There was not a lot of I think a lot of the women looked pretty strong in this match, and
you can build stories from it.
Yeah, good way to start the show. Seth Rollins versus Nakamura. This match is kind of weird because it's kind of polarizing. You got a lot of people saying that they hated it, and then you got people meekly coming forward and saying, I liked it. And they're like, is something wrong with
me? On, look, if this is the worst match on the card and you have a cross,
you're doing
thing
pretty
to say
good
about
yeah.
wrestling in general, then get bent.
Right.
Like, whatever.
Yeah.
I am of the opinion that Nakamura, speaking of somebody that has a character, Nakamura has such a unique character that I think in the WWE storytelling system, he's had a hard time making the show all about him in a way that he was used to and was most effective in New Japan.
I like, do wonder that too. Like, I wonder if, you know, people say that he's phoning it in or he's boring in WWE. And I'm like, do you think he's just trying not to be? Because you always heard about New Japan. He was like, have you seen this guy? He's so charismatic. Yeah. Oh my God. His entrance is everything. It's crazy.
This is just a storytelling thing.
Okay.
Where there's a fine line between being too cool for the room and being aloof. And unfortunately, if he's stripped of all the things that, you know, if he can't come to the ring, you know, with his crazy stuff and be very deliberate with how he walks there, he's in that very WWE rigid, hit your mark. You should be on in these eight places at these eight moments when the song hits. He can't make it his own in a way. And like, I think he's good when he's doing the, like the Knock America thing, but it's like, he has to own it. If the match isn't you entering into the enigmatic world of Nakamura, it just, to me, at times can come up with a disconnect. That being said, I thought this match is great. I thought the ending specifically was awesome.
The ending was fantastic.
I think it was the pacing. I think people are getting on for the pacing because it did start out a little slow, but it was a build. It was a slow burn, and that's why it was so good, because if they didn't start, stop, big move, stop, slow down, but it was just one good progressive. And when you were at what you said, Justin, at the end, you were just watching it like, this is incredible wrestling, because they slow hyped up into just this giant spots at the end. I thought it was incredible.
Yeah, no, it felt to me like the kind of pacing I think WWE fans maybe aren't used to, that New Japan fans are, which is this kind of slow build into epic finishes. And both guys seem very comfortable with it. Like I said after in the Discord, I was like, I just watched two really good wrestlers do really good wrestling. That's what I watched. Yeah. And it was 21 minutes of it or whatever, 22 minutes of it. But yeah, like I was thoroughly enjoying myself the entire time. So yes, there was a lot of walking around, and yes, there was a lot of, you know, recovering and, you know, trying to figure out what the next move they're going to do. But it felt like two methodical people trying to like find a way to finish each other, you know?
And that was the idea. And also, I think that there was supposed to be a little bit of tension in that match because they had built up Dean Ambrose so much. You never knew when, if he was going to run in. Like, I think that, look, I, to be honest, I don't even want to dignify criticism of that match with any point.
By the way, okay, if we do want to criticize, do you think Dean Ambrose should have shown up? Do you think this was a moment to do that?
Considering everything that went on in that pay-per-view, I don't know if we needed
another moment like that.
Yeah. I think it was the promo at the end. When they announced their TLC match, that's where it should have happened.
Okay, all right,
that's where it should.
I like letting these two guys actually fight.
We're gonna get a month of them beating each other with various different weapons. If we can have one promo where it's just, will he come out? Yeah. He didn't, and that's fine because we're not gonna get any more of them. The rest from tonight on. It's already started. Jumping the other.
We're going to be filthy with Ambrose Rollins interactions pretty soon. All right. So this, I think, Justin, you mentioned before we started the show, and I'm in agreement with you. This next match had the probably one moment where I was like, ah, come on, man, I didn't need that. And that is the AOP versus the bar match. And Drake Maverick pees himself because the Big Show's real scary.
I needed it.
You needed it. Okay. All right. So see, it was there for somebody.
See, I was talking to my wrestling owner who right now is very close to Drake Maverick's soon to be wife. And it was just tears of how hilarious it was, because I've worked a few shows with her and everything. And like, he does stuff different that most people didn't. If you didn't see what it was, it was a bag. Mm. If you didn't see like the bag of water. Yeah. Like when he fell, he just had to break
it in his pocket or something, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's something we haven't seen in a while, if not like something like that. I didn't expect that going into that match. I told you last week, Dills, I thought he was going to get hammered by the Big Show, but I thought that was good. I thought it was funny. I thought it was something cute.
All right.
I see. All right. I understand.
Yes, and.
Yes, and. Drake Maverick is somebody that's put over a 4-year-old. He did it very effectively and brilliantly. There are a few people that can react more expressively from being somebody who's very obviously small. Like, talk about a guy who understands his size, can theatrically play his size maybe more than
Yeah.
Anybody, like, he is like the inverse Andre the Giant in a way that Andre the Giant made every inch of himself seem that much more powerful. He makes every lack of inch of himself feel that more vulnerable. And I'm not in love with the pee pee poo poo stuff necessarily. I think that there's ways, just because for me, character wise, if you pee your, if there were a baseball player who peed themselves in center field, it would be the only thing we would ever talk about with them ever. And so in a world where you're supposed to be rebooting yourself, I think the either we're only going to be calling him Pee Pants Maverick.
Yeah, that's
like, you're going to make a t-shirt
or we're going to forget about it. To me is like that for me, storytelling wise, that's throwing the ball a little too far just for a gag of like, oh, isn't he scared? When it's like, look, I was waiting for the moment when little Drake Maverick, you know, gets cornered by the Big Show. I was hoping that there would, that the spot would be, you know, Sheamus and Occam, you know, confront and then get taken off, and Cesaro and Rezar confront and get taken off, and then the progression being Drake, you know, in his haste to like stand up, winds up like face to face with the Big Show, and then is like ah, and like freaks out. I think that would have been, I was waiting for that spot. Yeah. It didn't necessarily need to be. And then also the thing that bothered me about it wasn't necessarily that he did it. It was that we then had, and it was probably because he was fumbling with the piss bag.
Yeah.
Like
it was awkward
that we then had to have a very awkward minute of everybody just in shame, just shaking their heads like at him. Like it was like this very surreal sort of like, and now we'll all just look at him in shame for the fact that he pissed himself.
By the way, his character before him peeing himself was the guy who like saved 205 Live.
Yeah.
And the guy who, you know what I mean? The guy who cut super emotional promos about 205 Live was actually the best entertainment in WWE and all this kind of stuff.
Which was a change from his rock star.
Yeah, he's
Spud
not the comedic wrestler anymore. Yeah.
And I'm good with him getting back to Rockstar Spud. And this was a very Rockstar Spud kind of moment where he's cornered, he embarrasses himself because he's more mouth than man, yes. Right? Like, I like all that. I just didn't.
There's other ways to go about it, for sure. But now, okay, but I do see Lane's point there, where like if you know the guy and you're all sitting around like, this is hilarious, right? And I can definitely see that. I'm sure backstage they're probably all laughing and cracking up, and he probably thought it was hilarious too.
You want to know what was funny is that I listened to the Something to Wrestle With this week about William Regal, and they talked about, it almost makes me wonder whether or not there's just a different sensibility with British wrestlers, but the kiss my ass spot with William Regal was initially just pitched to him as like, oh, okay, well maybe we'll make you come close to kissing my ass, and then I'll pull back, and it'll just be like prove that you were going to do it. And William Regal was like, no, I need to kiss your ass because it'll be the biggest, like, all the heat. It'll give me an opportunity to flip out later. So like there's something about the like super weird. Yeah. Gross, debased kind of spots that maybe for the British mindset is just no. Of course, it's you know, a little song, little dance, little fake pee-pee down your pants.
All right, let's move on to Buddy Murphy, Mustafa Ali, real quick. I don't think we need to spend much on this because it was actually kind of. I mean, it was what you'd expect, but I think a lot of people were hoping for more than we expected, which it was good.
Wait, who had a problem with this match? This match was amazing. It was the first time that I remember on a pay-per-view where it got a "This is awesome" chant. It got a "Fight Forever" chant.
But there's a lot of talk of like, yeah, we've seen both these guys do all these moves before. Like there was nothing like to the match that was like
just because you literally watched a 24/7 documentary of their entire work. Do not blame them doing their job really well.
Sure.
On the fact that you've watched.
I had a great time. I had a great time watching this match. I thought it was great. It was, but it also, I think you could kind of tell that they were like, we all know this is going to be amazing. I'm glad to see that the 205 Live Championship is being defended on big time pay-per-views.
On the main show.
Yeah. Because that's sweet. But it was only 9 minutes long, and these guys could have done. You know, these guys could have done like 25 minutes of nonstop action.
Pop, pop. like they don't need to do a 15-minute match. Like, they can just go all out, do the big thing about 205 Live, when you ask what is the benefit of 205 Live in a world where our heavyweights, you know, when you wouldn't be shocked to see Braun Strowman do a fucking a 5-star frog splash, you know, like, what is the difference? It's because they can do moves reliably that you can't do on the main roster when Seth Rollins has to wrestle Braun Strowman. So yeah. It's like, to me, it's the power bombs. It's all those, like, those lifting spots that you can't reliably put in a main roster moveset because of the size disparity. And I thought that this was a great example. It's not necessarily the high flying, although you're going to see a lot of it. That's what I've loved about 205 Live, is you start to see some of these moves that have gotten phased out because you can't do it when it's Dean Ambrose versus Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, for sure.
Power bomb.
Yeah, when you know that, like, yeah, everybody's going to be able to do all of their stuff against everybody else, it does open up the possibilities for sure. I thought it was really good. Buddy Murphy retains. I think he deserves a pretty long run here because he is most physically imposing looking guy on that roster, and also I think one of the most skilled. You know what's funny is he was working heel here, but I can't dislike him. I just can't. Yeah.
The one thing that I do think, and to that point, that they could have done better is give him a mic at the end of the match, because you don't get a lot of package when you come into a 205 Live championship match. You don't, if you're not watching it, then you're not seeing a lot.
Yeah, open it up for the other people, right? Give them a moment to remember them and maybe think about checking out 205 Live.
It's been really good, and I think it would have added something if he just looked at the crowd and said, like, hey, I'm the best, and I'll be defending this championship on every pay-per-view until somebody kicks my ass, and nobody will. Mm-hmm. Like, in fact, 205 Live next week, Cedric Alexander, suck my balls. And then
so I think we're likely to see Mustafa Ali get another shot at it, so they're probably going to go at it for a little while here because he's pretty damn good. It's funny because I look at that roster, and I'm just like, yeah, they could just kind of send anybody at this guy, and they're going to have good matches, man. Just really good matches. All right, we got to talk about the men's Survivor Series real quick because this was okay. So there's a couple things happening here. Miz wanted Shane McMahon to die. Shane McMahon wanted Shane McMahon to die, and Raw just had three guys at the end, even though they couldn't team up worth shit.
I cried when Miz tagged Shane in, and you look and you're like, this is someone's dad. He looks like he's like, just go been get mowing him. The lawn.
Come
for
on,
three
Shane.
Hours. Well, and Rey Mysterio raises Shane's hand.
Sure.
Like, that's the thing. Like, he couldn't even get his hand up. So you see little Rey, like, move Shane's hand up so he can get tagged. And I thought it was hilarious. I don't like the way, I wish Raw would have, like, had more people eliminated.
Well, it would have made more sense, I think, because of the fact that they were all fighting each other. Like, Raw fought each other and then still buried SmackDown. Which...
Yeah, and that's what I talked about last week.
They mean, also had Bobby Lashley, Braun Strowman, and Drew McIntyre on Team Raw.
Look at this. Look, if WWE were a real sport and it were covered
Wait,
by real
what are you saying,
sports
Jerry?
Media, and it were covered by real sports media, Stephen A. Smith would have been apoplectic at the team put together by SmackDown.
Yeah.
Like,
it was like, okay, so you're fighting Braun.
How can you put together over 500 pounds, Max? 500 pounds in difference. Like, that team was so small.
Yeah.
They were so small. Yeah. And then, of course,
their answer to Braun is Rey Mysterio.
First 5 seconds, like.
They're struggling, though, because you got, so, you know, obviously, Daniel Bryan or AJ would have been in there if they didn't have the immediate title change, right? One of those guys would have probably been there, right? And you got, like, Kevin, where's Kevin? Oh, he's hurt. Where's Sami Zayn? Oh, he's hurt. Where's, like, all these guys that you think would have been there?
To be honest, this was the match that I think probably was affected the most by Roman Reigns going out.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You've seen so much of the top of that card shifted so fast, and some plans halted really fast, and people being rebooted and turning heel and doing all this stuff probably faster than you were supposed to do it. I would not have been shocked if this were the initial place that you would have seen Dean turn on Seth.
Okay.
Or maybe after that, after the Seth match against Nakamura, see that turn. I mean, that was the rumor. This was supposed to happen a little bit closer to that. And so I think what we wound up getting was a very fractured story where Daniel Bryan was probably supposed to play a part and Dean Ambrose was probably supposed to play a part. And AJ was going to play a part. And yet none of them are there. And you wind up just telling this story that hopefully, I guess, sets up a Shane heel turn or
that's the rumors. That's the rumors that they basically, like, with the World Cup, we talked about it last week. And with the show last night, that's why I thought, I'm like, can he beat all four people? Like,
well, when he came out, he didn't come on. It was like, no, he's not gonna. Like, that was like, was his last moment in this match.
And I think he could say it now, like, I'm the best in the world. Plus, like, I was the last one that made it. Mm. You guys couldn't even.
Yeah, yeah. He's gonna say, like, I'm carrying you, SmackDown. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's kind of the play.
If we do see the turn. Yeah.
I wonder. Well, number one, officially it is Thanksgiving. The tradition, unlike any other, as soon as Shane McMahon's face turns as red as a boiled ham, at Survivor Series, you know that it is officially the holiday season mm-hmm. has begun. Mm-hmm. So I hope everybody is prepared. But this is traditionally when we start to build the Shane's Mania match. So we'll see.
It's gonna be
how many coast to coast is he gonna have to pull in that one? I wonder what's gonna happen to him on the way from coast to coast this time. It's time. Yeah, and then it's time for his like 6 month hiatus where he lets his body heal back again. I had a great time watching this. I was laughing hysterically when they kept putting Shane back in. He sold the fact that he could barely move and operate anymore greatly. The whole thing was super fun and interesting. But we don't have much time left. We still got to talk about two insane matches here. So Ronda Rousey, Charlotte Flair. This was just a really freaking good match that then turned into like a live torture porn. This was insane.
I am here for it.
Yes.
I am here for every inch of it. The biggest thing about the Becky Lynch turn to me has not been that she defied going heel and people cheered for her. Like, I think that that's a very two-dimensional look at it. What she did after that was really make herself into a three-dimensional character. Look at it again in the character test. You can now imagine what Becky Lynch would do if she walked in, you know, to an episode of Seinfeld or something like that, right? Like, she, you know what she wants to do. You know what her wants, what her needs, what her reactions are. She is this unapologetic MMA-style badass who is, in a kind of Conor McGregor-y kind of way, here to talk shit, sell big fights, beat the hell out of everybody. That doesn't seem incongruous with who she was before. It prevents gigantic things going forward. When I saw that, I'm like, Charlotte. All right, so what's three-dimensional Charlotte? She's always felt kind of out of place, except for that initial heel run where it really kind of clicked, because she's always been a better cocky asshole to me than she is the, like, yay, you're a hero.
Yeah, kind of face Charlotte was awkward, I think.
Yeah,
this
was
the first time when, to me, the primal, because the one element of Charlotte that I've always felt has not come out is there's an element of, like, carry to her of, like, you're all secretly laughing at me and I'm taller than you other girls and I had that botched boob job. Like, there's just like an element of just like I have a simmering rage underneath me that I feel frustrated by the yoke that my family has put on me, and my dad's a fucking asshole. He's gotten married 50 times.
Sure.
Like, and that the end of that match to me was the first time where I'm like, oh no, she's not Ric Flair. She's Psycho Sid.
Something. Yeah. And oh yeah. There you go.
All of it.
Yeah.
I'm here for every, like, no, she is sadistic. Like when she did the neck thing.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
That was a disgusting beatdown. And
this is up there for me. Yeah. Like with this match, this is up there for the year. Like I do an end of the year recap. I look at all the, like, the matches to see what jogs my memory, what I like. And this was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was I think by far the best women's match I've seen all year. And and, you know, in match aside, you know, people were posting in our Discord, I would, like, five stars,
as a match, I would put Becky Charlotte from Evolution.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. 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 Just that was just a just
that,
yeah.
That was a better.
But
full
this
match.
Was. But, you could consider the end of this match being this match, though. To me, I think in a lot of ways because that was the story of it, right? And you know, Ronda obviously had to go out there and volunteer to be like, yeah, just whack the shit out of me with a kendo stick for a really long time.
Oh, and she before that, the chops that she had, yeah. I mean, like those were.
This was the most physical that we've seen Ronda Rousey have to get
I
on the other
get
end.
Get rid of anything in wrestling, it'd be chops.
Yeah,
they are the worst part of like not at like watching a match. I think they're great, but taking it.
Yeah, I hear your chest is instantly on fire, and
it is the worst. I took 11. My last match.
Oh my god!
And it was like numb after the fourth one. I'm like, yeah, let's just.
You're
like, keep
all right,
it going.
I guess yeah, just seven more. Let's go. But anyway, if you anybody who hasn't seen this, please just go freaking watch it because what they can do from here. And by the way, the storyline apparently is going to still kind of find its way back to Becky Ronda, apparently main eventing a WrestleMania, which I think could be insane. But people who are like, wait, does this mean that now that's not happening? Like, there's a lot of road to cover on the way to WrestleMania here.
To me, the best thing about the Becky Lynch injury is now we have three great characters.
Sure.
Because to me, Charlotte is a much better character after this. Becky made herself into an amazing character, and Ronda Rousey doesn't have to make herself into a character because she's Ronda Rousey.
We got the fourth character, Nia's Fist, which is also in there.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. All right, now let's move on to the main event of this pay-per-view, which was fucking awesome, dude. It was so hilarious.
It started not that way. We were all talking about it in the Discord. Like, you all, this is the first time all three of us were active at the same time. What was it? Someone said this was a murder.
I think I said something like, oh, so they're televising murders now, huh? Basically, this opened with, well, so Daniel comes out cocky as hell. He's kind of in heel role. You couldn't not, he was a face by the end of this match, by the way. You couldn't, and I know he's probably still heel, but just within the confines of this 18-minute match. So he comes out cocky as hell, and then he takes the first suplex and immediately goes, like, completely limp.
Dead.
Yeah, just dead. And then we proceed to get, what, like, 8 minutes of Brock Lesnar playing with his food.
It was just dragging him around, too.
Yeah.
Like, he went full limp. And this is one thing, too. This is the stiffest match that I've seen. Just people, just like, both of them just
beating the shit.
Yeah, because, like, in when Daniel Bryan, of course, so we talked about Brock Lesnar was just toying with him. Ref bump happens, kick to the nards. Daniel Bryan. And that's what, because last week I said Daniel Bryan's going to win this match. And I'm like, man, I really hope he wins this. And then at that moment, I'm like, yes, it's going to happen. My dreams have come true. And then, but like with the kicks to the head.
Then you got another 10 solid minutes of your dreams coming true before, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just too hard to put Lesnar down, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and again, man, you kind of wonder what this match would be on a SummerSlam stage, on a WrestleMania stage, something like that, where you could really build it and give it an ending where he wins, where Daniel wins. But for what it was, Daniel Bryan has always said that he wanted to wrestle Brock Lesnar because he wanted to tell the ultimate small guy, big guy story.
Sure.
And there's only a couple ways that you do small guy, big guy stories. It's either... Normally, it's like some kind of like choke or something where it's like, oh, well, if you, because that's like the
if you hop on his back,
small guy, big guy. Yeah. Well, either by weapons or by restricting his airflow. Right. This was a small guy, big guy match with strikes.
Sure.
Which is awesome. Like it's just something that you don't see all that much because you think like, well, if he could kick him into winning, like, why wouldn't he just do it naturally? But no, he just got ragdolled for the first part of it. And then it was about surgically, like, taking out the leg and kicking him in the head and being
that kick in the head was rough to watch. Like, I was like, that's when I was looking, I'm like, this is a stiff, because he like held both of Brock's arms right and just proceeded to
just
stomp the yard, but do a Mexican salsa dance on Brock's face. And I'm like, this is
that's
nuts.
That's a Bryan Danielson move, by the way. He used to do that stuff all the friggin' time. And it was like really cool to see him pull that kind of style out.
To bring back, I got till five. he has to bring back, I got till
that
five.
That would be cool too. So he. Yeah, I mean, you're right, though. Like, you don't often see the story being told with strikes, but Daniel Bryan has sold himself for a long time as, like, a guy who could do all the submissions, all the strikes, all the whatever. And it was like, this was, like, the tool in the toolbox that he thought was right for this job. I love, though, the fact that every time he thought he was, like, finally getting there, he would do, like, one more thing and Brock would just catch him, right? It's just like, you just can't hit him enough times where he can't, like, kind of recover. But Brock, you know, people talked about this, like, the Survivor Series Brock. Like, he, when he decides that he wants to have a match like this, he's one of the freaking best, man, at making everything that you do, all of your offense, look amazing.
He can sell. Yes, he can sell so much, and we forgot about that. And I remember that with AJ Styles when he put him in the calf crusher. Brock can sell. And that's one thing I think people forget is how good.
Because he doesn't have to very often, because most of the time he's just beating the shit out of you.
And look, people, you know, people give Brock a lot of shit because he's not the guy to carry you.
He's
and so when he's wrestling big guys who are less experienced than him or have not wrestled at that level at the same kind of way that he has, he's not going to save a match, right? But if he's got somebody that will bump their ass off for him and will be, you know, I guess it takes a very specific personality to get along with Brock Lesnar by, you know, reading the tea leaves, and Dean Ambrose is not one of them, then he does great. He's awesome. That match was fantastic. And again, it's like, that's as classic of a match archetype as you can do. That is as classic as the Battle Royale strongman spot of, you know, four people beating down on somebody and then the big guy kind of exploding out of it. Yeah. This is old school big man, little man wrestling. And that was about it as well done and as realistic, to be honest with you, as you're ever really going to see.
And by the end of this match, everybody, like, I love the shot of the guy when Brock Lesnar just finally hits him with the F5 and Daniel can't get out from the three count. And you just see the guy like, because it was like the feeling everyone was having, like, so close, man. Oh, I wanted it so bad. Like, everybody wanted it so bad.
Well told, though. That is a story well told. Yep. If that is the feeling that somebody came 99% of the way to doing the impossible and fell short, that match did exactly what it was supposed to.
Yeah, it certainly did. And it was great. And I thought the entire weekend of wrestling was great. It makes me very excited about where we're headed, because we have had, I think, some duds of pay-per-views. And this, to me, was like, yeah, but all of that just kind of got us here, right?
I was sports entertained.
Yeah. You know what was really great, too, is to see that WWE can kind of like adjust to real life circumstances and make fantastic shows out of them. It's almost like they do better when they have those situations. I mean, we all remember Finn Balor, AJ, right? When suddenly they had to just suddenly make that match happen. It's almost like they do their best work when their back's against the wall. So
I think that's the problem with WWE. If there is a problem, is that we have never been more informed about the product. And the one thing that we hate the most is predictability. We despise predictability. And so right now, you know, when we don't really know who's going to be the champion at WrestleMania with Roman gone, who knows who's going to be the champion come WrestleMania. We have no idea who's going to be the women's champion. We have no idea. I mean, like, hell, when Becky got over and then all of a sudden the rumors were like, oh good, no, the WrestleMania main event is going to be Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey. And it's like, oh, because they're going to give away Flair versus Rousey now. It's like, holy crap. Yep. This is absolutely unpredictable, and we love it all the more.
Hell yeah. All right, well, it was great to have Justin back on the show. You can see on the screen if you're watching live that you can find him on Twitter at Justin R. Young. But what else is going on with you, buddy?
That's pretty much it. Right. You want to know what? Everybody just continue to support the 1-900 Wrestling Patreon. Continue to support these boys, and I will be I will surely – you will not be long for seeing me back on this show, specifically during the season of all seasons, WrestleMania season in the office.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, standing invitation. Just you let us know when you can make it onto the show, man, because it's always good to have you here. Lane, what's going on with you, man? At Lane the Main on Twitter. What else?
Been playing a lot of Fallout, a lot of Pokemon, but with this big weekend, this is a giant weekend for me. Two big indie shows.
Sweet.
One here with Paul Ellering that I've really wanted to meet him, and Sandman's going to be there. They're doing something like that. But there's the second biggest wrestling convention this weekend I'm going to in North Carolina. Really, really happy. They have everyone's booths and then a giant wrestling ring in it, and just going to go there and hang out and see what's going on down there in Salem.
Awesome. Well, if anybody else is there, please say hi. Let them know. 1-900-WRESTLING brought
you. If you see me, just come talk to me. I may be behind some of the booths of some of the guys. More than likely, I may be with the boys. Maybe if they're with Dalton Castle, I'll be back in the booth with them. Or with Al Snow. I don't know who I'm sitting with yet. So if you see me, talk to me.
Nice. Sounds like a good time.
Awesome.
And if you want to find me, I'm at Willie Dills on Twitter. And as Justin said, the 1-900 Patreon is how you can join our fantastic community. Hang out with us all on Discord during pay-per-views and basically just all the time. I mean, anytime you just want to just say anything about wrestling, it's a fantastic place to do so. So patreon.com/1900wrestling is how to join that. Just as little as $1 an episode, and you are part of the greatest wrestling community on the planet. That's going to do it for this show. Again, thank you to Justin Robert Young and Lane the Main. My name is Willie Dills. We'll see you next time. But until then, Justin, you want to do it?
Be dying!
I want you to call me for all of wrestling's latest news and views. I've been involved in wrestling for 35 years, and nobody knows wrestling like me. Remember the number
1-900 Wrestling!
Stupid idiots.
They call me Hara!
If you smell what The Rock is cooking.
And his name is John C.
Well, look at this, prima donna.
Thank God Donald Trump's a whole idiot.